To item number five, baptism under fire. Congratulations on your first report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Morning, Commissioners. Good morning, members of the public and staff. I guess I want to say a couple things. I want to say thank you to all the commissioners. Last Friday, you asked me to take on this acting role, and I just want to say that I appreciate the vote of confidence, and I'll work as hard as I can to keep us moving forward in the 4 or 5 months I'm in that role. Also want to say thank you to Amy for joining the team in a new role. Real excited to have her here and have her communication skills and people skills and background with the agency as part of the team here at headquarters. I think we got a real strong team, and I'm real proud of all of our folks, and want to say that we're going to work hard to take care of a lot of the issues that you all are bringing forward as members of the public, and so wanted to say that while we were here in person. I've got 4 or 5 issues to discuss. First, I wanted to talk about the legislature. On Tuesday, we had the 30th day of the legislative session, and as well as the first fiscal cutoff. Both of our existing bills, our hunting and fishing recruitment bills and the ADA accommodation bills, are moving forward well. In fact, the ADA bill just moved off the floor in the House over to the Senate yesterday. And so that's ahead of the pack. And we feel real good about that. Getting a lot of positive interactions, building some relationships across the street, which is always helpful on the long term. I'm going to ask Amy in a few minutes here to talk a little bit about net pens and some recent activities with net pens. She's been very involved with that in her past role as Region 4 director, and I think you'd be interested in learning more there. Wanted to point out a bill that you may not have been paying attention to, the governor's carbon tax bill. Senator Carlisle's Senate Bill 6203 is the first, I believe, carbon tax bill that's moved out of the policy committee in the last 3 or 4 years that this governor's been trying to do that. The bill would set a price per metric ton of carbon emissions to $10, with a $2 per year annual increase. And then the money would go towards a couple of important initiatives. The Clean Energy Investment Fund, about 50% of those dollars would move there. Rural Economic Development Fund, and then important for us, and the reason I bring this up, there's a Water and Natural Resources Resilience Account that the Department of Ecology would oversee. It would amount to about 35% of the revenue, and if my numbers are right, about $500 million a biennium. So big money. And the agencies that would be involved would be Ecology, Fish and Wildlife, Transportation, and the Recreation Conservation Office. And these dollars would be available for stormwater, flood prevention, water supply, fish passage, forest health, and ocean acidification. So not sure, you know, whether that bill will make it all the way through the process, but it's interesting that it's made some progress, and it's very interesting at the, you know, around the possibilities for funding of a number of our needs down the road. So more to come on the legislature. There's some additional highlights in the written materials that you have in your notebook. Wanted to also mention a phone call that this is a follow-up to the Columbia River policy discussion that Commissioner McIsaac mentioned in the opening remarks. He and I were on the phone with the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Director Kurt Melcher this week, and just to introduce the idea of a get-together between the commissions. And we laid out a planning horizon of next September potentially for that meeting to occur, and a commitment to get together probably after the March discussion in Wenatchee, but to get together once or twice between now and September to do the logistics and coordinating. But the Director Melcher was receptive to the notion of getting together. He was going to consult with some of his commissioners about what, you know, their sense of that, what that might look like. And we'll be back in touch in the near future here. Third issue, and this is a pretty big deal, but in terms of substance, I don't think there's a lot of there'll be a lot of concern. This is the U.S. v. Oregon management agreement. This management agreement has been under negotiation in a court setting for the past 2 years. The agreement expired at the end of 2017, but by agreement of all parties was extended until March. It's being described as pretty much a rollover agreement. So the conditions that were in place would remain in place. They're talking about a 10-year period. This agreement's key, the NEPA processes and the Endangered Species Act processes that are associated with the agreement allow for the harvest and for hatchery operations at a number of hatcheries in the Columbia River. And because it's a court-related piece, I think Joe Shoren will be prepared to answer any questions or provide any additional detail in the executive session this afternoon. Commissioner Thorburn?
Yeah, if I could. This was actually the portion of the discussion of the Colville Confederated Tribe Region 1 and 2 meetings that we were able to sit in on, the USV Oregon sort of rumors that are out there, which are kind of confirming that it's a rollover. The Colvilles have real concerns. They are not a party to U.S. v. Oregon. Have sought that in the past, but it's not really possible. Yeah, they are now contributing to the summer runs in a big way, and just are concerned that that's not being taken into consideration in a rollover. So just to put that out for everybody. Do you want to add anything, David?
No, I just will echo what Commissioner Thornburn mentioned. There has been concerns. They feel like they've been locked out for technical reasons. They are becoming a major player in Upper Columbia production of not just summer runs, but also spring salmon. And that's part of the process that we're involved in, is updating the information on production and escapement needs and things like that. And they have, with the construction of their new hatchery at Bridgeport, have become a major contributor to upriver production. So,
yeah, that's a beautiful hatchery.
I encourage
folks to see that if they haven't. And maybe Joe Shoren can address a little bit more of that this afternoon.
Sure.
So I wanted to give Amy a chance just to update you on the Atlantic salmon net pen issue, which has been in the news. I heard it this morning. There's been an announcement by the governor yesterday supporting a phasing out of net pens in the Puget Sound, and a lot of activity there. But Amy was front and center through that whole investigation and report as one of three agencies. She was our agency representative. So I'll give it to Amy for a brief review.
Okay, so you guys have probably heard some of what's been going on with the Atlantic salmon, but I'll give you the quick high level, and if you have more questions, you can ask them. Essentially, we finished the three state agencies, Department of Ecology, Department of Natural Resources, and Department of Fish and Wildlife. We jointly investigated what happened at the Cypress net pen failure that occurred in August of 2017. What we found from that investigation was that due to lack of maintenance and net hygiene, the nets themselves became very heavy and biofouled with mussels. That net acted like a sail underneath the water. It pulled the net pen off its moorings, and that then created the conditions that allowed it to collapse that then spilled the Atlantic salmon into Puget Sound. The event that occurred in August was preordained essentially by the event that occurred in July. The the July event, Cook themselves said that they almost lost the farm, and it was the exact same mechanism. It was the biofouling that caused what happened in July. They then tried to fix it. They really did not share with the state agencies what had happened in July, so we did not go out and inspect. We took their word for what had happened. And so that then led to the August incident. The Atlantic salmon that did escape into Puget Sound, we do believe that they underreported the number of fish that escaped into the sound, and they overreported the number of fish that they extracted from the net pens. And so we believe, based on the evidence, that around 250,000 Atlantic salmon were released into Puget Sound. About 50,000 were taken out of Puget Sound. The fish that were released into Puget Sound, we did not see signs of colonization, which would be a concern for us. We did not see signs of disease, and we did not see signs that they were eating any of our native flora or fauna. We anticipate that the fish that are in the freshwater systems will probably survive for a little bit longer, but those in the marine system, we believe, have probably perished at this point. The Department of Natural Resources has terminated the lease at Cypress. They have terminated the lease at Port Angeles. That leaves them with two leases left, one off of Bainbridge Island and one off of Hope Island. The bill that's moving through that the governor supported yesterday would phase, if that were to pass, it would phase out the net pens. Cook has indicated to us that they are interested in continuing to move fish into the pens as long as the leases are still working. So we need to sort of talk internally and figure out how we address that, given the phase out and the termination of the leases.
That's a Canadian company.
It is a Canadian company. They're based in Nova Scotia.
Newfoundland.
Thanks, Amy, for that nice summary. So my understanding is that, you know, the Cypress Island facility, that's been in existence for a while, right?
A long time, yeah. Maybe
and,
since the 80s.
And Cook recently, in the last 2 years or so, purchased that from Icicle Seafoods, right? Correct? So is this more, in your opinion, and if you would rather not say, that's okay, but I'm just wondering, is this more a function of a negligent owner, or is this kind of a situation where this has been developing over time during Icicle's ownership, if you know?
The facilities at Cypress were slated to be replaced because they were old. That's clear from the documents that we read in the Cook stuff that we got. I believe that our relationship with Cook is new. It's only been around for about the last year and a half, so it's hard to know exactly who Cook is as a company. But I do think that their lack of transparency around what happened in July and the lack of transparency about the number of fish extracted from the pens is troubling. But I would temper that by, you know, there is concern that in the community that these fish are, you know, there's a very high risk to our native stocks from these Atlantic salmon. And our scientists say it's a fairly low risk to the native stocks. But I think we all agree that, you know, our salmon are in trouble, that it is death by a thousand cuts. And whether or not we want to take this particular risk at this particular time is a policy move that I think the legislature and the governor are sort of weighing in on at this point.
Just kind of a follow-up. Is Cook a big player in the pen industry along the B.C. coast?
No, I do not believe they have any pens in B.C. They have their pens, I believe, in Canada on the east side as well as in Scotland. I think they're about an $8 million company is what is vaguely in the back of my mind.
Thank you, Amy. The last piece I wanted to address today involves a handout that I'll send around. And what I wanted to try and do was, this is a draft, but what I wanted to try and do is to deal with any expectations you may have of me personally as I take this role on. And, you know, we've talked about performance agreements and with the director, and the matrix evaluation of the organization talked about making sure those were up to date. So I put this in the form and shape of a performance agreement, and tried to lay out, you know, what I would personally spend my time on, understanding there'll be issues that come up that require immediate attention, understanding that the agency does so many things, and that there are a lot of capable people carrying out those initiatives or activities. But these are the my thoughts about where I would spend my time, and I've laid these out in the format of our strategic plan and our four goals. I've expressed those goals in terms of shorthand, but they're the preserve, protect, and perpetuate types of activities around conservation, the create outdoor opportunities, our shared community interests and shared community connections, that's our goal three, and then our institutional and workforce strength. So just laid out what I think are high priorities for the director to engage in. I won't go through all of these, but I would invite you to take a look. And again, this is a draft, and either now or sometime in the near future, give me your sense of whether I'm on point or not, whether you'd like to see something else here, if this is doable. A number of these activities, I'll be in an assist or support role. Other activities, I'll have a more direct ownership or leadership of. So I wanted to just make you aware of what I'm thinking in terms of how I'm going to spend my 4 or 5 months in this role, and anticipating we'll have a new director on board sometime around the first of the fiscal year, sometime around the 1st of July.
Thanks, Joe. This looks great on a quick glance. I'm looking at integrate and advance habitat into salmon management recovery discussion, and your second bullet, watershed planning and in-stream flow setting. I really like that. As we move forward, I think that we're talking about communication about what the role and mission of the department is. And in this small western state that is rapidly, rapidly growing, I think in order for us to effectively conserve our public trust to the fish and wildlife of the state, that we really need to think on a landscape level and communicate that as really the direction that we're taking. And so doing like watershed planning and in-stream flow setting and really communicating that and making it very visible, I think can clarify how we are implementing our public trust responsibilities.
Thanks, Commissioner Thorburn. One of the drivers for my inclusion of that is the passage of a Hearst resolution, and the importance that's going to take place there in watershed planning and in-stream flow setting. That's receiving a whole another boost. So I want to be part of that.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Smith. Excuse me. I wanted to thank Joe for agreeing to step into this role, and to maybe just take a very short minute to let the public know about a couple of decisions that we made yesterday, in case you want to participate in any way. We have decided as a commission to take the on the task of recruiting a new director for this agency on ourselves. We're not going to ship it out to a headhunter. We're not going to ask the governor's office to do it. We'll be doing it. We think that's our role, and I think we're all kind of excited about doing it. Part of that excitement is that we know that for now this agency is in such capable hands, not only with Joe. We love the fact that he has recruited Amy, even though that's to the detriment of some of you out there in Region 4. And we really fundamentally believe in the staff of this agency. That said, okay, so I've been in this job a year now. My favorite part of these meetings is what we just did, the first open public meeting and the director's report. And I want to just make a quick observation. I don't know if you all know how unusual it is for the public to have an ongoing and predictable chance to come talk directly to the people who run this agency. That doesn't happen anywhere else in state government that I know of. And so I think that's an incredible thing that we offer. I also love to, even when you're lecturing, even when you're yelling at us, you guys come up here, you stay in your 3 minutes mostly, and you get some very relevant points across that we're writing down. So thank you for that. So then the offer, last paragraph. One of the things we're going to try to do, and we will fail at this, but we will try, is to get public input from people who care about what we do on just a bulleted list. What are the top five things we should be looking for in a director? And also, if you have any names of people you think we should be recruiting, if you could get those to us, we'll look at them. If it's okay, send them to Tammy. So that's my little, I should have said this at the very beginning of the meeting instead of sort of fake responding to Joe, but we do appreciate that you're here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me also echo the thanks to Joe for stepping up here and helping during this time of transition. And thanks for all the thinking so quickly to come up with things like this. To come up with thinking about a transition team and some of the other staffing arrangements that you spoke of on the conference call last week. And so I think your stature and your stability and your positive nature is going to go a long way to helping this transition period over the next 3, 4 months, 5 months, whatever it's going to be. So some genuine appreciation for you doing that, Joe. During this transition period, maybe just a couple of thoughts of mine it's going to be a very busy time. There's a lot of challenges. I'm sure the staff will be having a lot of questions about all of this. Your idea yesterday to involve the staff in designing the characteristics of the position announcement that goes out of the characteristics of the executive director is another example of some very quick and good thinking that contributes to that kind of stability during the transition period. To the extent that you and your team can avoid the kind of negative impressions that have happened recently, I think that would go a long way to helping the transition. We've had some public testimony that does fall into that negative category, and so for the next several months, to whatever extent you all can play some strong defense and keep that on the other side of the court, that would be good. Workload is always a very difficult situation when these kind of transitions occur, and from my perspective anyway, it wouldn't be unreasonable for you all to talk to the staff about pulling back the reins a little bit on the expectations and elevate the quality and not try to be in any kind of a rush to accomplish everything. Having said that, however, there are some essential accomplishments. The North of Falcon negotiations for 2018, the Chinook Regional Management Plan, and there are many others, but I would just ask you to take a look at the highest priority ones and not to press the staff to work overtime all the time during this transition period. There's such dedication there and such strong dedication amongst this group of professionals. That will probably be their inclination, but to whatever degree that you don't leave folks exhausted at the end of this 5 months, I think that would be a look to the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Commissioner McIsaac, for the kind words. I'm actually putting together a staff message that should go out early next week that has a number of those points included. So I appreciate the advice.
And under personal achievement, the ability to walk on water and solve miracles. Is that...
So that's my report.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
we've had questions. So thank you. Yeah, and I appreciate this as well. And